Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Let's talk.
John Brown. Free ride, heartbreak, courage, and the 20,000-mile motorcycle journey that changed my life. Is this as a story by Norley Schoenmaker about, as the book title says, a motorcycle ride that changed her life. Delighted to say that joining me live on the line is Norley herself. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Good to have you with us. Thanks for staying with me on that. Just tell me a little bit about what inspired you, if you like, to don the helmet and leathers and set off on this motorcycle journey.
Well, I suppose it wasn't much of an inspiration. It was more that my life kind of fell apart. Yeah. So I lost my house and decided to then just leave everything behind then. And I flew to India and bought a motorcycle, and I'm still riding now, 6.5 years later.
so you're in the Netherlands, you know, as you said, your life falls apart. Now, I can get people might go to India to get spiritually aware, or they might go to Bali to, you know, to get their chakras aligned. I mean, you decided to get a motorcycle. Had you got any sort of relationship with sort of two wheels before that?
Yeah, I had my motorcycle license and I had a Ducati Monster. And so from the moment I started riding, that was my first motorbike.
Your first motorbike was a Ducati Monster. Okay, I'm liking you already.
Yeah, it's not quite a beginner bike. Yeah. But I love that thing. So I was already in love with motorcycling, but I didn't set off with the idea of riding around the world. I just left with the idea of I'm going to try and start a new life and I'll see what happens. And I just kind of randomly came across motorcycle rental places in India where you could rent a motorbike for like 15, well, probably £10 per day,
right,
at the time. So I was like, oh, let me rent a bike. And yeah, as soon as I did that, I was like, this is it, right? And I bought one, and like I said, I'm still riding.
So, I mean, riding monsters around, Ducati monsters around Holland is one experience, or the Netherlands, excuse me, is one experience. But riding motorcycles in India, because one of my fellow presenters has just got back from doing 1,000 miles in a tuk-tuk or a rickshaw across India. And her reaction was, you wouldn't believe the driving skills over there.
Yeah, well, the good thing is that if you survive that and if you can ride in India, you can ride anywhere else in the world. So it does prepare you for whatever is about to come.
So what was your plan then? I mean, do you just thought, I'm just going to keep going, I'm just going to use this to clear my head? And sort of how did you sort of logistically do this?
I mean, I rented one because I wanted to see this valley in the Himalayas. It's called Zanskar Valley. It's extremely remote. And I was thinking, how do I get there? And then I saw these motorcycle rental shops. I was like, that's an idea. So I rented one for 3 weeks and rode around. And as I returned the bike, I felt like a bird with clipped wings. You know, suddenly I was like, now what, you know? So then I decided, okay, I'm going to buy one. And I figured, okay, where am I going to go from here? And I thought, okay, well, you can't really go into China, and the bike had Indian plates, so I couldn't really go into Pakistan with that.
Right.
So I was like, okay, this leaves one option. I'll just head east. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to ride to Malaysia, to Kuala Lumpur. And then that's it. I don't know. So I did that. And then as I arrived there, I was like, yeah, but I'm not going to stop now, am I? So then I thought, oh, I'll just, you know, ship it to Oman and then, you know, ride around the Middle East. So I rode through Iran and I was still at that point thinking I'm going to ride then back to India to return it. But every time I reached the point of like, now I need to stop, I was like, I'm not ready to stop. So I just, yeah, kept going.
Just can we just wind back here a minute? Because you just casually say, well, I just ride through the Myanmar, Burma, except we used to be, but you know, that thing, which is quite an interest. Should we call it an interesting area? And then you say, oh, I just ride through Iran. Now, a friend of mine, a girlfriend of mine, famously rode through Iran back in the day. And the only way that she could ride through Iran safely was by wrapping herself up and telling everybody that she was an Irish teenage boy. So how did you manage to get through Iran being, you know, being a Dutch lady?
Yeah, I don't think I ever said that I was an Irish teenage boy. But I mean, yeah, the only thing, okay, you have to wear a hijab, eh? You have to cover your hair. So I was doing that and then the helmet on top. And yeah, just go. I mean, people were generally obviously surprised, you know, as soon as I opened my visor, they were like, it is a woman. And I would be like, yes. And, you know, you would get like the, where's your husband? You know, that happened a lot. And then I would be like, I don't need one, I think. And yeah, I just did it.
I've got an email. I've got a WhatsApp from a listener in Ibiza who's going, we like her. So there. So we're like that. So when you get to sort of Iran, you're skirting. You're hitting the Stans, aren't you? So that's what. I mean, you took Turkmenistan on the border with Afghanistan again. And I mean, you're a geologist before, so you know your way around rocky areas, I suppose. But doing this on a motorcycle, mountain passes, you know, it must have been an interesting experience.
Yeah, definitely interesting. Yeah, mostly because I was a terrible, terrible rider. I mean, I'm still not really great, but I guess I'm a little bit better. But back then, you know, I on a Ducati Monster, you ride on tar,
yes.
You know. So, and in the Netherlands, it's almost everything is tar. So I'd never done any like off-road riding. And then you hit like these terrains with snow and like riding at 4,000 meters altitude. Yeah, I was just, I don't know how I did it actually, because... Yeah, as I said, I was not a good rider and dropped the bike countless times. And yeah, it was definitely interesting.
Yeah,
that
interesting,
one.
Interesting in italics, I suppose. You just casually say, you know, I dropped the bike. Well, if that's fine if you drop the bike, though. It's not fine if you drop a monster. I remember again being on the back of one of those things, going across Clapham Common in London, thinking I was going to die, looking at the tarmac. But if you drop a monster, you know, in an Utrecht or something, you can sort of, there are people around. But if you drop the bike, and what bike was it, by the way?
That was a Royal Enfield. So
oh, blimey.
That's the good thing. Like, yeah, if I would drop my Ducati Monster, I would cry.
Yeah.
Because it will immediately damage. But that Royal Enfield was like a tank, you know. It didn't really matter what I did with it. It was pretty unbreakable. The problem is that they're really heavy. So that bike was like about 200 kgs. I don't know in pounds and stones, but pretty heavy.
We're in Europe. We'll use kgs, shall we?
I mean, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's not just the weight of the bike. It's the weight of what you're carrying with you, because presumably you've got panniers, you've got fuel, you've got tents, etc. I mean, you had all that with you?
Yeah, no, I didn't have any tents. So it's yeah. I had no, that's one thing I realized at some point when I was really high up in the mountains. I realized if I get a flat tire, I can't even fix it. And I can't have nothing with me to spend the night here on my own in the mountains. And it was very, very cold. And that was a moment that I realized, like, actually, I'd probably die. So better not to get a flat tire, or, you know, keep the bike up and keep going. And yeah, luckily that happened. But I should have probably brought a tent.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So miracle of miracles. I mean, this seems to be very much, as we say in English, on the hoof. I'll just go and we'll see what happens. I mean, did you sort of discover that you had, you know, you have skills that you didn't, you didn't know you had, I suppose, because you, like I said, you were a geologist before, and I suppose that you could sort of work out what rock formation was coming, but otherwise, I mean, were you used to doing things on your own? I mean, were you used to taking these sort of risks, or these calculated risks, I suppose?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think I discovered a hidden skill, but I do think that before I started doing this, I already traveled to more than 70 countries on my own. So the whole traveling thing was not new. I had solo traveled around the world, backpacked, and also in my previous job, I was just sent everywhere. So for me, like, I wasn't really so intimidated by the travel itself. I was like, I got that. The only thing was I'd never done it on a motorbike, plus I was a horrible rider. So the motorcycling was the biggest obstacle.
But you must have improved, because you don't. I mean, how long did it take you to get from Myanmar back? Because you're heading back to the Netherlands, aren't you, on a roundabout way?
Yeah. So that first journey took about 9 months.
So if you're on a bike for 9 months, I put it to you that your motorcycling skills must get a little bit better, surely.
A little bit, I think, but it took many more years, and even now I can't say that I'm really particularly good. But
so yeah. After you'd gone down from the mountains and the rocks and the thing, and gosh, I should have bought a tent, and I hope they get a flat tire. Well, they won't find me for years. Where did you first see tarmac again then, and what was that like?
Yeah, so I saw tarmac again when I entered Kyrgyzstan.
Right.
And Kyrgyzstan is also an amazing country with amazing off-roading. But at that point, I was so happy to see tar. I was like, I am never leaving this tar again. But then again, you know, after Kyrgyzstan, I rode into Kazakhstan, which is just the most boring, mind-numbing country I've ever been to.
And apologies to anybody from Kazakhstan who's listening in, by the way. She doesn't mean it, okay?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I always seem to offend people. But I didn't like that because it's all flat, you know, like, so I had to cross like hundreds and hundreds of kilometers of flat tundra.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was really missing those mountains again, and I was starting to think, no, I'd rather be thinking that I'm dying somewhere in a mountain than being on this really boring stretch.
I mean, I'm just thinking of all the sort of the people who do sort of around the world. You know, you're thinking Charlie Borman, Ewan McGregor. I've interviewed Charlie a couple of times. He's a lovely guy. And they go out and it's all very macho. It's all very hairy chested and everything's planned and everything's, you know, everything is sort of exciting. And then you're saying, well, it was quite boring in Kyrgyzstan. So, I mean, what are the people like? Where did you find the people were friendliest, and where did you find the people were like, okay, you know, I'm going to use my cycling skills and get out of here?
Oh, I mean, definitely Iran was amazing. Like, the people there were so friendly, and I was getting invited every single day by total strangers on the street, like, oh, please have lunch with my family.
The food,
you know, but just strangers inviting you into their house. It's not something that I grew up with. We don't really do that in the Netherlands. We're kind of like wary of strangers, you know. So that was really, mind blowing. That I was like, wow, I can't believe these people are so friendly to me. But if you're now going to ask me where were the people not friendly, then I'm going to offend, you know.
Well, just come on, you've already offended. I'm already on a banned list in Kurdistan, so let's go for it.
No, to be honest, I wouldn't even know. I couldn't even name a country where people were unfriendly, you know. I often, like, the only people I usually have trouble with is like authorities, police, army. Like, those are the people that can be annoying or nasty, but normal people, I usually don't have a problem with.
How were the border authorities then? I mean, you know, because you rock up and you're a woman from the Netherlands, and you're on a Royal Enfield, and you're a border post in one of the stans. I mean, was that the thing that you used to think? Okay, today I've got to go across a border, so I'm going to be 2 or 3 hours while some guy in an outrageous uniform goes through my papers.
Yeah, I mean, like, crossing land borders on a motorbike, it's always a thing. Like, I mentally prepare myself for, like, okay, another border crossing today, because you never know what's going to happen. And, like, when I left Iran, I crossed into Turkmenistan. And so I felt kind of relieved, because I was like, oh, freedom. I don't have to wear a hijab anymore. Mm-hmm. But then you enter Turkmenistan, which has, like, probably after North Korea, the most hectic dictator in the world, you know. And it's an insane country. And then at the border there, I had all these military Turkmen, military men that were barking at me like, do you have bomb? grenade, AK-47? And I was like, no. So yeah, I was...
Were they asking you, or were they saying, offering you? So if you haven't got them, we'll give you one, because you're going through, you know...
I didn't think about it that way, but maybe they were offering. I think they were asking me if I had that, tried to bring that into Turkmenistan with me, but that would have been a bad idea, probably.
Did you know anything about these countries as well, or did they sort of reveal themselves to you as you drove through and you thought, wow, this is an amazing country?
I try to read up about places a little bit before, but it's usually when I'm in the country that I actually really also read up more about it, because you see things and you're like, huh? Like, what is going on here? And then I start to research a bit more and you learn more about a country. But I always try to not plan too much in advance, you know, because it will just give you an idea of a place and I'd rather be surprised.
I just want to say that, what is going on here is my normal state, to be honest with you. So there's nothing. I'm coming with you on the next run. As you got into Europe, into quote unquote more civilized, well, I doubt it, but more civilized. I mean, when you start approaching, it's like maybe you're 3 days out from the London. Did you start to think, well, I could always just turn around and do it again? Were you sort of prepared for what was going to be a normal life, or had this journey changed you? And you know, if it was a Hollywood movie, they would say, and nothing was ever going to be the same again.
Yeah, if you put it that way, it was kind of like that, because I mean, I went back to the Netherlands because I knew, like, okay, I need to kind of reorganize, regroup, think about a different bike, because I was riding this bike with Indian plates that was not registered to my name, because that was impossible being a tourist. So I crossed 25 countries as Ahmed Mohammed on the papers. So I was like, it's probably better if I have a motorbike that's registered to my name. So I was thinking about those things, but I knew that I was going to continue that. Yeah, that already knew, because my plan always had been try to find a way to travel full time and make money while doing it.
Yeah.
So that's why I started the YouTube channel. And when I came back, yeah, after those first 9 months, I had about 150,000 subscribers on YouTube. So I wasn't earning enough to pay for everything, but it was getting there. So I was like, you know what? This might work.
And I mean, lots of people have YouTube and social media. I mean, 150,000 is pretty good, and then you got two million. I mean, how did you get out there without going? And this is the thing I hate when people go, "Hi guys!" If I ever see something with somebody going, "Hi guys," it's the off button. So were you sort of amazed by the way it sort of developed organically, and suddenly you've got 1 million, then you got 2 million followers.
Yeah, it never, I've only once that I can say that something went viral. That only happened one time. But like for the rest of those like 6 years, it's always just been growing just steadily. So yeah, nothing like crazy. It's just been steady, like 1,000 a day extra, like 1,000, 1,000, 1,000.
Yeah.
For a really long time.
And what did your friends say when you got back? I mean, apart from, I can't believe you did that and glad you made it. And now, okay, you know, are you going to go, what are you going to do next? And what did your friends think, apart from the fact you were absolutely, obviously, you're obviously interesting, I think would be the word we use again.
No, I don't think anyone was really impressed. I mean... because I think I traveled so much before as well. So yeah. Everybody was kind of just like, okay, so when are you leaving again? You know, so people were just around me, were just expecting me to just piss off again and go on another thing, you know? So nobody thought that I would come back and get an office job or something.
Did you still have the Monster at home, the Bugatti?
No, I sold it. I sold it. Yeah. When I left everything behind,
yeah.
I sold it. But I've always regretted that.
Because, was it the red one? Was it a red one?
Of course.
Yes. Honestly, I'm getting people saying, where is this girl? Bring her in. We want to. You're getting offers of marriage, by the way, now on my WhatsApp, just to let you know. especially from Ibiza. I would stay clear of Ibiza for the next couple of years if I were you, to be honest with you. So, you said that it changed your life. And a lot of people say, yeah, oh yeah, you know, I went to Bali and went on the swing and it changed my life. But this is a real case of it changing life, isn't it? This after this, it was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. This is what I don't want to do. I don't want to do anything else anymore. I just want to be able to do what I have experienced now and keep it going. So that must be a fabulous feeling.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I never really go in that whole, like, yeah, I went on a swing and it changed. I wouldn't really say, like, it changed my life in the sense that, for me, the only thing that changed is that now I don't have to work for a boss anymore. So, that's the main thing. So I feel like I am even more free. But like I said before, I always found ways to travel. And now I find a way to do it without having a boss. So that's for me, like, the only real change. But... Yeah. I haven't been on the swing, so maybe I could try it.
Please don't get on the swing. ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, there's a swing in Bali that everybody apparently goes on. You have to pay 10 whatever it is to go on, 10 euros to go on it. And you take this picture on the swing, and apparently it's a thing, apparently. But yeah, that's just part of my thing about Bali. Anyway, the front cover picture, it's a great picture. Whereabouts is that?
Yes, the picture on the cover of the book is I'm standing in Tajikistan, and on the other side of the river is Afghanistan.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because you're obviously high up, and there's this beautiful, this is a barren landscape, but with this river with snow on either side of it. I mean, that's proper, yeah. Proper riding.
The river is the border.
And so writing the book itself, were you recording as you were going every day, or how difficult was it to write the book? I mean, is this the sort of thing you were able to do, or, you know, did you sit down with a laptop? Did you keep notes during the day? How did the book come around?
Well, I've always wanted to be a writer, and I've always written a lot and kept, like, travel diaries. But in this case, you know, I was filming for YouTube, so I had all this material, you know, and all this raw footage as well that I didn't even use for my YouTube videos. So that was obviously, yeah, so great to have, because it would bring back memories, but also a lot of detail, of course, of exactly what I saw.
So what are you hoping that people are going to discover, learn from the book?
Yeah, I was finding a bit of a difficult question because then, yeah, I don't know. I always feel like those questions puts me in a position that I have to be some sort of guru. And the thing is always like, this is my life and this is what makes me happy and what I love doing. But I never have the feeling like everybody should do this, because this is not for everyone. I know that, because it can be very lonely. I mean, I always travel alone. I'm always alone on this motorcycle. And I know that not everybody likes that or aspires to do that. So in that sense, I would definitely not say, oh, everybody must do this.
The book is called Free Ride. You can order it via our own virtual bookstore. Go onto the Talk Radio Europe website. You'll see that picture on the front, and go and click on that, and the book will be sent to you from our minions. If people want to find you online, just tell me where we can find you on YouTube and Insta and all the social media.
Yeah, if you look for Itchy Boots, then you'll find me everywhere.
That's a brilliant. That is a brilliant name, by the way. The book is called Free Ride. It's by. Am I getting your name right? Is it Noraleigh Schoenmaker, or am I completely wrong there?
No, you're doing a pretty good job.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, Noraleigh Schoenmaker.
Well, there you go, Noraleigh Schoenmaker. There you go. The book is by Noraleigh Schoenmaker. The book is called Free Ride. You can order it via our own virtual bookstore. It has been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thanks for having me.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at coda.com.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.